Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to email us at ForgottenFailuresCast@gmail.com or visit ForgottenFailuresCast.com.
Well, 12 minutes a pound. That means you have to be in the oven by no later than 1:30. Oh, but evisceration takes at least an hour.
Evisceration? What does that mean?
First you make a long slit, then you take out everything that isn't meat.
Hey, this is Daryl.
This is Lindsay.
And this is Mike.
And this is also Mike. And you're listening to Forgotten Failures, the podcast where we watch an obscure movie and then try to determine whether it deserves to be obscure. And this week's movie is Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, which was selected by Mike Riley. So, Mike, explain why you selected this movie.
This is very similar to Finding Hardware. It was basically looking up horror movies on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw that, and I was like, it's got the kid. It's got a Lawrence brother.
Matthew? Yeah, that was a Foxy Lawrence. Yeah,
I didn't know there was more than Joey.
There's three.
No. Yeah, there's a third. There's a third.
The third
one
doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
much.
No one cares about
it. He had a minute in the limelight.
The obscure Lawrence.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was basically that, and it looked kind of interesting. It was a horror movie.
Yeah.
Fits into the Scarevember.
It's a horror anthology movie.
Yeah, it actually looks like it might be a legit scary movie, which I'm kind of excited for.
No, I do love anthologies.
I remember seeing, I think this is one that like the poster was up for years and years at the rental store, but I never really thought about it too much. Kind of like The Page Master.
Ah,
This is an anthology movie. It's not Tales from the Crypt, the movie. It's not The Twilight Zone, the movie. It's not Creepshow. It's the Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Or the Trilogy of Terror, another trilogy.
Oh, yeah, it's not Trilogy of Terror either. I want to watch that. Yeah,
Faces of Death.
It's also not Tales from the Hood.
But I think it's similar.
Or Tales from the Claw Dead Zone.
Yeah.
Tales from the Hood is also an anthology.
Yeah.
Type movie.
So this is kind of like the third Creepshow movie, I think. And it has an all-star cast featuring Radon Chong from Running Out of Luck.
Yeah. I hope there's a really wet sex scene involving Radon Chong.
Well, maybe someone will get raped and she'll laugh in this one too.
Well, I think she plays a ghostly snow woman, so maybe not.
Ghostly snow woman.
All right.
Oh, well.
All right. Well, I'll start off. I'm looking forward to this. I hope it's scary. I hope to get an actual scare from this and not just like
a scare.
Not just like a tongue in cheek kind of thing that we've been watching.
Like you're expecting this to be for real.
Yeah. Like I expect to like go upstairs and be like open the door a little bit. Like, all right, we're clear of goblins.
Goblins or robots to disembowel you.
Not a single ghoulie or critter or gremlin in sight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're wanting to watch like a bunch of YouTube videos of like cats and kittens afterwards
hopefully.
Like kind of eye wash.
Yeah, get a little eye bleach going.
Oh.
All right. Yeah. What do you think?
All I know about this movie is that there's a cat in it. At least one cat.
A cat from
seems
where?
Seems like from hell, I think, which probably means it's an evil cat.
Maybe he's the good cat from hell that's trying to leave hell to be good again.
I mean, not all black cats are evil.
Yeah.
So
do all cats go to hell?
I guess if all dogs go to heaven.
It kind of leaves it open-ended.
I don't think that was the implication. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. They all dogs go to heaven didn't really address whether or not cats go to heaven or hell.
Yeah. Sheep go to heaven, goats go to hell.
See, dogs don't really have a choice because they're all good, right? Yeah. Cats have a moral choice.
That's
in their
right.
Life, so they could go to heaven or hell, I guess.
Yeah.
It's true.
So you're looking forward to this, though?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping that it does not promote black cat stereotypes. All cats matter. They truly do.
What about you, Daryl?
Well, I'm too hoping that this is a real horror movie, and I guess I also want to see a trilogy movie. I guess those kind of fell out of favor. I haven't seen one in forever.
Not since Tales from the Hood.
Yeah, basically. I think that's the last one ever.
Trilogies ended on top with Tales from the Hood.
It is the official tombstone for trilogy horror movies.
Is it a trilogy? I don't remember.
Yeah, it is.
I think
it
you
is.
Meant anthology.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anthology.
But is it? I think it is it three?
Yeah, it's usually three stories.
They seem like three is a good number.
Yeah,
like,
three is a magical
number. So when the second one is very disappointing.
Was at least four.
Creepshow 3 actually came out afterwards. It was more recent.
Oh, there was a Creepshow 3. Okay.
There was, and it was actually really good.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing this great casting, including Steve Buscemi as a grad student, David Johansen as a hitman, Debbie Harry as a witch. This sounds great.
Debbie Harry? Wow. That's awesome.
Witch? Oh,
I'm into it.
All right. Yeah, and William Hickey, the old man from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, cast as an old man.
Nice. All right, well, with that, let's watch it.
Actually, if Lot 249 lives up to my expectations, it won't matter that I was cheated out of the Penrose.
Cheated?
Yeah, something very unfortunate happened to me the day before the committee was to announce its decision.
What?
I was accused of stealing a pre-Columbian Zuni fetish from the museum.
Well, did you?
I loathe Zuni aesthetics.
Okay, we just watched Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, didn't we?
Yay!
Yes,
we did.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
it was a trilogy.
Yeah.
It definitely was.
I enjoyed it.
It anthologized.
It anthologized,
for sure.
Yeah. For sure. Do we want to do the ratings first, or do we want to go right into the Mike D. Break D?
I don't know.
Let's do Mike D. Break D.
Yeah, and then we can do the ratings.
Do we do one rating or three ratings?
Well, I think that we should do a rating overall, then maybe choose our favorite. Yes. Or maybe we could break down all of them, and mm-hmm. I don't know. That would take so much time.
I think it's
this
one
sounds
movie.
Like something we should discuss beforehand.
Okay, well, I'll try to do three summaries simultaneously.
This is a Mike D. challenge.
Fuck off! Okay, this is three stories all about how, first of all, Christian Slater and his rich friend are at college, and they're all bullying Steve Buscemi for some reason, who's also at college. Steve Buscemi buys a mummy, I guess, at an auction and is intending to resell the mummy, but the first thing he does is like tear it apart to destroy all of its resale value. Anyway, inside the mummy, he discovers a scroll, which helps bring the mummy back to life. Then he gets the mummy to kill the people who've been bullying him, and then eventually Christian Slater cuts the mummy's head off, but Steve Buscemi brings other mummies back to life to kill him. The end. Part two, The Cat from Hell. A terrible, annoying old man is being persecuted by a cat because he used to run a pharmaceutical company which did a lot of testing on cats, and this cat came back from hell to wreak revenge on his entire family, and eventually it does. The end. Part three, so Radon Chong appears to a man, and she is his dream girl. This guy is an artist, and he is really hit the skids. He can't sell any of his art. He really sucks. Then one of his friends gets killed by a gargoyle. Then Radon Chong appears, and then all this time during their great relationship, he has to not tell anybody about the gargoyle because the gargoyle told him not to. But after 10 years of blissful marriage, he tells Radon Chong about the gargoyle, and she turns into the gargoyle and kills him. The end. That's the end of everything. Oh, and also there's the framing device where Debbie Harry is cooking and eating a child.
Yeah, you missed it.
Yeah, the whole thing that ties everything together there.
Well, I wouldn't say it ties them together, but...
Well, it's the thread. It's the reason why the stories are being told.
And baby Lawrence.
Yeah, it's baby Maddie Lawrence.
Whoa.
And in his most annoying role ever.
Yeah. Matthew Lawrence with the worst kid voice in the world.
Help me!
Yeah, and he's kind of got that, like, lispy drawl, too.
Yeah,
and for a kid that's being fattened up to be eaten by a witch, he is super skinny. She's doing a terrible job.
She's only had him for, like...
A couple hours.
Yeah, like, not that long.
She seems to be a really incompetent witch. She's just like, I don't ever have any wine glasses for the party I'm throwing. I don't know how long it takes to fatten up a human child.
Yeah. It's like she brings home, like, five boxes of cookies and wants him to eat them all, and then she's going to immediately cook them.
Well, she wanted
child plus cookies equals profit, right?
Well, she found it on Pinterest, and it's a cookie stuffed child recipe that she's been wanting to try, where you just force feed a child until it stuffs itself, basically.
Yeah, I mean, how often do you get to make child cookies?
Okay, probably the best part of that device was when she was like talking about like how she was going to eviscerate him. I thought that was funny.
Yeah,
like eviscerating. What does that mean?
Yeah, does it take an hour to eviscerate a child?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
So reviews, I guess.
You want to start?
I guess I could start. Overall, I think it was, for an anthology, especially for its time, it was really good.
Yeah.
There are a lot of cheesy things about it, but that's just special effects stuff that I actually like. It's kind of cheesiness that I like. Like, the gargoyle was really good practical effects, but for like today's standards. It's not scary. It just looks kind of goofy. The mouth movements and all of that kind of stuff are just like very hokey. But I would say that of the three stories, like technically four stories, of those four stories, my favorite was probably, surprise, surprise, Cat from Hell. I really enjoyed that Cat from Hell because it was super friendly, but also just not taking anybody's shit. It had a job to do. It completed that job. And it had this thing where, like, it was very obviously a friendly cat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it just was very well trained and would do whatever. But then it was just a randomly, not really randomly, but just purposefully attacking all these old people. And the story is basically all of these really rich, old, insane people, yeah, like hopped up on drugs, like in this house together, and they're just all nuts. And this, yeah, cat comes in and just tears everything up.
Yeah, like those are flashbacks because it was through this terrible blue filter. But I think we're flashbacks to like a month earlier.
Yeah, yeah, it was all told in flashbacks. This old man. I mean, you can go ahead, Mike, if you want to tell it.
Well, yeah, this is the old man, played by William Hickey, with the most annoying old man voice in the world. Like, this cat has been killing everybody! And so he has these flashbacks to, like, one day earlier or something, when him and his old lady friends are all dancing around and having fun. And then a cat somehow, the cat doesn't just kill them, it somehow, like, overpowers them in a way that it could only do with old people, I think. It's like the cat somehow pushes this woman down the stairs and smothers another woman. Like, the cat must have had to wait decades for these people to become weak enough that it could kill them.
Not really. The cat was just doing cat things.
Yeah.
Like, other than suffocating a woman using its whole body.
Yeah, usually
like,
cats do that to babies.
Yeah, that's.
Well, I don't know if they do that. That looked like, you know, like a face grabber from Alien.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Like forcefully holding himself. Yeah.
But throughout the story, the cat is doing plausible stuff. And then at the end, the cat, like, turns into a xenomorph and climbs down this guy's throat and, like, pops out his belly.
Okay, wait a minute. We're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Well,
let's stop
say.
Talking about this. We need to get back to reviews.
We still haven't done the ratings.
Okay, so, my review.
Okay.
Right? Go for it. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying not to interrupt, but I would say that maybe the Simpsons trilogy of Treehouse of Horror episodes kind of led to the end of these anthology movies, because really this all three of these stories could have been told in the space of one Simpsons episode. They're very simple stories. So I think I have to give it a don't watch it. I liked the cat segment. That one was very unpredictable. The other two I thought were really predictable, so I don't think it's worth spending a whole 90-something minutes watching this, unfortunately. But I did like Steve Buscemi.
To finish my review, I will say that it's a good watch if you enjoy anthologies and that sort of storytelling, like that sort of gimmick with movies. I'm a pretty big fan of anthologies, just in series and in movies. Mm-hmm. So if you're okay with hokey stuff and you want to see a baby Matt Lawrence, who's really annoying, and Debbie Harry as a witch in a really nice house.
Yeah, she's a suburban witch named Betty.
She has an amazing fridge that is worth looking at. because for 1990, it's an insanely nice fridge.
Yeah, it's a nice fridge for 2015.
Yeah. So I would watch the movie just to see that fridge, honestly.
Yeah.
But I would recommend watching this. This is more of like a probably maybe more on ridicule, just because some of the stories do drag a little bit because they are kind of they're kind of flat. Like, they're very predictable.
Yeah.
You know these stories. Yeah. You know where they're gonna go. It's still fun.
It.
Yeah, it's fun to watch.
So do you give it a watch it or a make fun of it?
I give it a somewhere in between. I would watch it and make fun of it at the same time, like we did.
Yeah. I am going to sort of agree, but I am definitely going to recommend to watch it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was everything I was kind of hoping it was going to be. There was, like, I think maybe one good scare with the mummy. And outside of that, it wasn't like too scary, but it was still like a good in that wheelhouse of decent horror movies, mm-hmm, especially from the era. And the practical effects were cool. The makeup stuff was cool. Some of the stories did drag a little bit, but it was never to the point where I was like checking my watch or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was never anything too crazy. I was pretty engaged for most of it. And the good thing about being an anthology is even if the story sucks, it's over in about another 10 minutes.
Yep.
So it moves on pretty quick. But even the whole wraparound story I thought was kind of, you know, it's all of it, like you said, was very predictable, but it definitely was a cool, like, storytelling feature.
No. It is fun.
Tool. A good storytelling tool.
Yeah, it's a fun movie.
Yeah, it was definitely, I don't think you, you could definitely ridicule it, but it's not a waste of time to watch it, I don't think either.
No.
It's definitely, it gets a watch.
It's no creep show.
No.
Yeah, I think I'd say, I'd give it a watch too. I'd give it a watch because I don't think there's enough to ridicule about it, and it's definitely entertaining enough to warrant like a watch. It's probably something you're gonna watch like once and never watch again, but it'd be worth the watch. It's not too long. Yeah, I think the big thing we're echoing here is like the stories. Yeah, you know all of them. It's really contrived, and as soon as you start watching it, you know exactly what's gonna happen. But I guess you know the movie's about the getting there, and it you know the getting there is kind of fun. I mean, the last story in particular is like it's particularly worth watching, and I mean worth watching in that it's hilarious to make fun of.
Yeah,
I think it's probably like the weakest of the three stories.
That is the most ridicule-worthy story.
Which part did you make fun of?
Well, I think we'll get to it at one point.
Yeah.
But, it involves the 10-year anniversary.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Ray Dawn Chong is now a mom, and she has exactly the same hair, but the way it becomes mom hair is that she put it up a little.
Yeah.
So kind of fun. Where should we even start with? Like, do we just
let's take them one at a time,
chunk by chunk?
Yeah,
I guess we'll do the first one, which we didn't talk about as much. The mummy one, which I think I was trying to figure out which one I liked the best, because I think I definitely would put this and watch it, but the first one, I wanted to say I liked that one the most, only because it's got Christian Slater
and Steve Buscemi.
Oh. The casting in that one was pretty cool.
Yeah, that one was star-studded.
And Julianne Moore doing aerobics in front of the TV.
Exactly. That had Christian Slater, Steve Buscemi, and Julianne Moore in it.
And Julianne Moore was wearing some sweet late 80s, early 90s spandex workout suit.
Yeah.
I wish that was still what, like, you know, when people go out and work out gear, I wish that's still what
spandex
that
spandex suits and like, leotards.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There are lots of people who, like, you know, that's like their going out gear, just like it's pretty much
just hanging out with some leg warmers,
not good enough for work, but you know, good enough to go to the grocery store.
Now it's just
or
yoga pants.
Yeah, nowadays we don't communicate that somebody is a sexy young woman by putting her in leg warmers, like that girl cat on the Heathcliff show.
Hot pink.
We bring back Jesse Spano.
Yeah, exactly.
And just everything in just super like bright colors, like neon green.
We need that super pink. High cut of like women's,
like it goes above the hip.
Yeah, the hip bone cut.
Yeah, yeah, like
the
on the bikinis in society.
Yep.
And don't forget the scrunchies. The scrunchies are a crucial part.
Crucial.
You can't even call yourself working out
side
unless
ponytail.
You're actually going to do a side ponytail.
Side ponytail.
Crucial.
Or the Jesse Spano hair as worn by Ray Dawn Chong as well.
Yeah. So
the moment, was cool.
Yeah, so that was lot 249, I think they...
Lot 249, yeah.
And so what happens...
It's an Arthur Conan Doyle story originally.
Yes.
All the stories are... from something else, so I guess we just mentioned that.
Yeah, kind of just adapted. Screenplays were adapted by someone
and
else.
George Romero was one of the screenplay guys that did the whole thing,
which is awesome.
Which is cool.
And you could tell because you could hear you can hear a George A. Romero movie playing at one point.
Yeah. And the Mummy was very
is just playing in the background on every TV.
Yeah,
and the Mummy was very George Romero zombie-like as well.
Oh,
like, in its movements and everything.
Yeah, so Steve Buscemi, this is where the story starts falling apart.
Steve Buscemi is a young anthropologist.
He is very pissed off because Christian Slater's douchebag friend, who is dating Christian Slater's douchebag sister, got some sort of like fellowship or something. He got something that...
I think they're grad students and they're applying for, I don't know, some sort of grant money or something.
So Steve Buscemi and... douchebag friend of Christian Slater, they were up head to head for something. Somebody tattled on Steve Buscemi or told
a lie.
Somebody accused him of stealing a pre-Columbian Zuni fetish from a museum,
which he didn't even like Zunis.
Yeah,
so,
he's like, I don't even like Zunis.
Of all the pre-Columbian fetishes I should have taken, no way.
So Steve Buscemi is a man seeking vengeance, right? And he is one fedora away from just like your modern just
neckbeard.
But he because he has that, he's dressed like he's in
he's like that guy that like steampunk a little too much.
He's dressed like he's in A Christmas Carol, like he's about to be in a like a play, like Christmas Carol play. He has like the pocket watch and everything.
Yeah
And he looks super dorky. He has a dorky haircut.
I think he just imagines himself as a young Indiana Jones, so he dresses all old timey.
Yeah, but he just is, he's super...
But he forgot that Indiana Jones was played by someone who was not like him.
Yeah. Ironically, he did not have a fedora, though.
Yeah, super socially awkward.
Oh, I'm sure he did. It was just in one of those locked doors. Yeah, he's got a fedora collection, I bet.
But okay, so here's the part where it's like, what? So Steve Buscemi apparently does not come from money, and
no.
Christian Slater and his friend and his sister are all, they are all WASP-y.
Yeah, they're all preppy. Yeah,
Christian Slater and his friend were wearing sweaters and playing tennis in the opening scene.
Yeah, so you can tell that they're very rich.
And they have short shorts on. Yes. That's how you know they're rich.
Well, not Christian Slater. He's too cool for that.
Yeah, but short shorts on and sleeveless sweaters over long-sleeved t-shirts or something like that.
Yeah, it's the classic early 90s preppy look.
Exactly. Steve Buscemi gets a... He orders this box. Yeah. And it's a mystery box. And Christian Slater and his friend stop by. His friend leaves because his friend's like, fucking whatever, after a while.
I'm gonna go bang
and,
your sister.
And so, yeah... exactly. And so Christian Slater's there, Steve Buscemi, and they're looking at this. They unveil it. It's a mummy. It's actually
it's a sarcophagus.
Yeah.
And he talks about he's prying it open. He's like, "You got to see what I got in this box. Yeah. It's locked 4249 or whatever."
Yeah.
He's opening the box up and he's like, "Yeah, you see, I got to get stuff like this because I don't have a silver trust fund in my mouth."
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Which begs the question:
mixed metaphors.
Yeah. How do you afford a sarcophagus in the first place?
Yes.
No. Well, like the idea was that he bought that to then resell it. Because he needed money.
No. But
how do you buy a sarcophagus?
How do you buy a sarcophagus when you have no fucking money?
Yeah,
is the question. How do I have?
Didn't he borrow money
from
the two rich assholes to do it?
No,
no.
Yeah, I don't know.
He said he was going to pay them back later or something.
Oh, that was for the tip for, you know, bringing a...
Oh, that.
Yeah, that was for the delivery guys.
Yeah.
And everyone acts like this is, like, so nonchalant. Like, he's got a 2,000-year-old sarcophagus in his dorm room.
I feel like...
Yeah, did he order that from Sharper Image or something?
I feel like maybe in, like...
Complete with mummy.
Like, in 1915, this wouldn't have been a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But like,
yeah, because you probably could have dug one up or paid some, like, endangered servant.
Yeah, it was, like, whatever. You could go get one yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Just like take a shovel, buddy.
Go into a tomb, get one yourself.
Just go out there with
not a big deal.
Howard Carter and get a curse put on your head and come back with a mummy.
Yeah. But like in 1990, no way. Like those were all in like museums and shit in like at the Smithsonian.
Yeah, that's
like,
the pitfall of doing a movie based on a story by Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, I guess
exactly. Times have changed somewhat.
Yeah,
but so Steve Buscemi is he's super into this mummy that's laying there, and he just immediately destroys it.
Yeah.
It's like just cutting into like the wrappings and stuff.
Yeah. And in his defense, even though he did buy it and we're like, where did the money come from? This thing was in pretty shit condition.
It was
chipped and it looked like it was made of cardboard. Like it was
lots of
like,
dry
as
rock.
Far as like the actual sarcophagus part.
Yeah.
It looked like a movie prop.
Yeah,
it definitely did. Especially the mummy's face looked like a prop.
Like maybe this was just a peasant mummy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those are like in the seconds bin at the mummy depot.
Yeah, this is like the McMansion version of a mummy.
This is like, you know, this is like third cousin down on the line, not too well liked, kind of stupid.
It's like Jack Tut. Right? There's the King Tut, there's Queen Tut, and then there's Jack Tut.
And they just kind of have to keep him around.
Yeah, they're like, we don't like this guy.
This is one of the cousins. He died early. You get to practice on him so you don't fuck up with the emperor.
Basically, they actually killed him.
You were only able to pull out a quarter of his nose, of his brain through his nose. Just leave it. He won't need that in the afterlife. When
that's intern work right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Steve Buscemi is like cutting into this mummy. He's explaining to Christian Slater what's in mummies and how they like,
basically how they preserved them.
Yeah, how they mummified mummies or mummified people.
They were just ripping all this stuff out of the mummies' innards, like myrrh, cassia, onions.
And flowers. And they were fresh onions, too.
Yeah.
The other thing is that, again, this is 1990. Like, this knowledge about Egyptians and mummies is, like, it's not a secret. Like, everybody learns that. I think it's
Encyclopedia
like
Britannica was around.
Yeah.
Christian Slater's just an idiot.
Yeah.
He's at what looks like a top university. He's like, oh, what's that thing?
Yeah.
What you got in there?
Yeah.
Pull it out through the brain. They pull the brain out through the nose. Oh, man.
But to be fair, gnarly. I don't think I do that.
So apparently one of the things that they stuff mummies with is a scroll to then activate the mummy to bring it back to life.
Yeah, very, very cool.
Who knew?
Yeah.
It's like a golem.
Yeah, because Steve Buscemi, he uses that, and he does this incantation type thing to bring the mummy to life.
Mm-hmm.
And while these hoes ain't loyal, that mummy is loyal as fuck.
Yes.
Because that mummy basically just does whatever Steve Buscemi wants it to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's pretty focused, too. When it first gets woken up, which, by the way, when mummies get woken up after the spell and incantation, it always shuts out the power anywhere yep. it's at. It just yeah. immediately shuts down the grid. And you got to restart it. But the mummy is very focused. Christian Slater's trying to, you know, like, put the fuse back in. And the mummy's like, get the fuck out of my way. I got to go kill this guy. And he just pushes him out of the way. Doesn't even...
Yeah, that was a cool thing about the mummy is that it's like it's got a mission and it stays to that mission.
That.
Like it's not on a killing rampage. It's like, no, I'm just going to go kill Bill and that's what I'm going
to
do.
I've got this very specific thing to do.
Like a golem. You put your shopping list on the golem's forehead. He goes off and gets it for you. Then he stops working.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And this mummy, you know, he's a smooth operator, too. He goes into Christian Slater's friend's house to go kill him, and he sneaks, he punches through the glass, sneaks in, and then he starts, like, you know, straightening out a clothes hanger. He's like, yeah, I think this is how they did it with me. Straighten out, you get the clothes hanger, you straighten it out, and, you know, he's, like, creeping around this guy's house.
Was he, like, pulling the tape out of a VHS tape?
Yeah, he is a really big mummy. He's
really
like,
tall dude.
He's like 6'4".
Yeah,
he's like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. <as a mummy.
laughs> But he's like, just the same, he's still like, he's a B&E artist. He's he's just like sneaking around this guy's house. He's skulking.
Oh, man.
He's very limber for a mummy. Like, for not having any muscles.
For something stuffed with garlic and the stuff they gave Jesus on his first birthday.
Yeah.
He's really just, like, extremely limber.
But,
he's very rangy.
But before that death scene, we saw a scene with Julianne Moore, who is this guy's girlfriend. And they're talking. He's, like, making her dinner or something.
Yeah,
this is Christian Slater's douchebag friend. And so... Julianne Moore is at some point she's leaving and he's like, why are you leaving to return library books now?
Yeah.
You don't care about that.
It's like 10 o'clock.
Yeah. And so Julianne Moore is like, oh, I'm going to go like return these books and then I'm going to go stop by Steve Buscemi's place. And he's like, why are you going to do that? She's like, oh, he always has a boner around me.
A hard on. He's got a hard on for me.
He's got a hard on for me. So I'm going to throw off a scent. Because I think they think that Steve Buscemi's on to them.
Well, he was on to them. He made a thing that someone basically, you know, framed him and caused him to mess up his whatever it was for the grant.
He needed this. He needed that fellowship.
Yeah.
How else is he going to buy expensive stuff and then rip it apart?
Yeah.
And
so she actually gets the little, I forget, zoomy thing.
Yeah.
And then plants it into his apartment. That was the whole reason why she went there.
So earlier they framed him for stealing it, but they didn't do that by planting it on him?
No, they just stole
it
and framed him.
Several months to do that?
No, I don't even think it was several months. I think it was like within the course of like a week or something.
Probably.
So they stole it, framed him, and then she was going to plant it in him because she was onto them. He was onto them.
Yeah, and she's a super like, she is kind of one of those, you can tell she's kind of one of those women that uses her sexuality for, like she's very hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
She's very about her business. She's very manipulative. Like you could tell all these
There's a motive.
Because she's a good actress. You can tell all these things.
Yes.
But yeah, so she goes and talks to Steve Buscemi and Steve Buscemi is like the least suave guy in the world.
Hey, you want some brandy?
Brandy, yeah.
I got some.
Yeah. Yeah, and while she's gone, the mummy breaks into her apartment.
The douchebags.
Her douchebag's apartment, and then that's
lays waste.
Yeah, she rips his brain out. He rips his brain out, and then it's the one good like scare. The whole thing, the mummy. Moves pretty quick and jumps out from a scene. It's one of those like boom gotcha type of moments.
Yeah, the mummy looks like, what up? I just scared the shit out of you. Now I'm gonna strangle you though.
I got business.
Yeah.
If only he'd been hiding outside the window and then grabbed him as soon as he opened the window, like in Hardware.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah, and one of the funnier scenes is when Julianne Moore comes back and then the mummy is there.
Yeah.
And the mummy attacks her.
She like is talking about how much she doesn't like chrysanthemums, right?
Yeah, and at first she like when she first sees the mummy, she kind of seems like turned
like,
on.
Bring
by
it on!
Yeah,
like, come on, man.
She's not fazed at all.
Yeah.
Not fazed at all.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
What
no
do you
scream.
Want?
And then somehow
exactly.
she gets upset, and then she just like tosses really lightly tosses the pot of chrysanthemums at the mummy, and he just catches it and just throws it back at her. I want to give him that.
Oh no! It disintegrated in his hand.
Yeah,
like
the vase broke, and then he threw the flowers.
Yeah,
it's like I'm filled with these. I don't want more.
Yeah.
And then she tries to stab him, which is dumb.
Well, she does stab him.
Yeah, she does.
But he's a mummy. He just takes the scissors out and stabs her back.
And he stabs her, and then he stuffs the chrysanthemums inside the wound. Mummy stuff. Yeah. That was unexpected. I gotta say that.
That was kind of cool. He was like, "Yeah, this is how they did it with me. You guys like this, right?
Yeah.
You like being filled with stuff, right? Like flowers, and do you have any garlic? I'll get some onions."
And he's doing like the worst job of it.
Oh yeah. To his credit, he's only got like three fingers
and no brain.
Yeah.
So and Christian Slater then comes in later because you don't see the finished product. Mm-hmm. And the finished product is like the mummy. Then after like stuffing her with whatever he could find, he like wraps her up in like tape, like masking tape or something, for like a very bad job of it.
Yeah.
Like just one very quick layer.
Well, mummies, they didn't have masking tape back in his day. He had to figure it out as he went.
Yeah, man, he's shooting from the hip on this whole thing.
He was like, "All right, this is kind of how I looked before. Sort of wrap it around, and we're good.
Yep.
We're good. Get some flowers in there.
Any canopic jars around here? I can put her brain in."
he's a mummy, not somebody who made mummies. He just kind of knew what they were about.
Yeah,
but
they had
really
professional embalmers back then.
Yeah,
wasn't just any geek off the street.
I mean, he's just Jack Tut. He doesn't know what's going on.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're still only in the first story, and it's like we've been like almost.
I was just thinking that
now.
Same thing. So basically, they
and
go back. Christian Slater. Yeah.
Well, all right, we got to talk about Christian Slater going full Christian Slater on Steve Buscemi. All right, so Christian Slater figures out that Steve Buscemi, sent this mummy to kill his sister and her sister's douchebag boyfriend. So he's pretty pissed about that. He decides he's going to burn Steve Buscemi alive.
In a very Reservoir Dogs.
He's going to, quote, roast your nuts.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he really does go full Christian Slater.
Oh, yeah. He's got this big grin on his face when he's wielding this electric carving knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That scene was awesome. He's got the electric carving knife and he cuts the mummy's leg off.
Yep.
And then Christian Slater was a badass in that whole thing.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. And he's like, before the mummy even comes alive, he's like going over to the mummy and breaking the mummy's fingers off to use his kindling on Steve Buscemi.
He was killing it, man. Yeah. I was like, Christian Slater.
He had that whole, squinty eyed look. And
he was like, finally, my chance to impersonate Jack Nicholson in The Shining instead of Jack Nicholson in other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the mummy.
Yeah, the mummy was cool. And it's weird because mummies kind of fall out of fat. Like mummies are very not very
it's not
scary.
It's a monster that
they're completely fallen out of fashion. Yeah. But it was kind of cool to see like a more modern mummy.
Yeah.
That's why they fell out of fashion.
Yeah.
I mean they're slow, they're basically zombies, but without the more immediacy of hurt.
They're retro zombies.
The immediacy of hurt.
Yeah, because I mean, with a zombie, you get bit and you're gonna turn. With a mummy, you're like,
In cartoons, all you gotta do is unravel them; they're done. So they're super easy.
Yeah.
They spin out, and
you just pull them, and they start spinning and spinning and spinning, and eventually they disappear.
Yeah. So the next part.
$50,000. There'll be another $50,000 when you bring me proof that the cat has ended its time on Earth.
I don't believe this. You're hiring me to kill a cat?
That cat has killed 3 people in this household. That leaves me.
Cat from Hell. We talked about
it's
a little bit.
It's a Stephen King story.
Yep, Stephen King story. It's a black cat. It's a cute cat.
All cats from Hell are black, I think.
And that's stereotypical. we did discuss this earlier. All cats do not go to hell. They have moral choices in life. And unlike dogs...
Most cats go to hell.
All dogs go to heaven.
Most cats go to hell.
All dogs go to heaven because they have no morality.
Yeah.
So they're automatically good.
Yeah, yeah.
Like mummies. They are just loyal all the time.
Exactly. But cats can choose their path in life. And this cat went to hell.
This cat definitely went to hell.
Oh, yeah.
And came back.
He's actually like, the avenging angel of hell just for all the other cats in hell.
That's right, because when he went to hell, he met 5,000 cats, and they all said, the Dorgan family killed all of us to test their cosmetics, so you need to go back, like Nicolas Cage in Drive Angry 3D, and murder this entire family.
Yeah. This cat was on a mission, this old guy, what was his name again? I had it written down here.
Which one? Dorgan?
William Hickey?
Yeah, Dorgan. Yeah, William Hickey. He's actually...
Drogan.
You might recognize him.
The old guy's name.
Yeah, you might recognize his voice at least from The Nightmare Before Christmas because he was the evil scientist.
Yeah, he was also the old guy from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, the guy was always guy with a smokes, cigar.
Yeah,
he smokes a cigar and he was burns in major the tree pain down.
As oh, wait, didn't yes, he kill a cat in that?
Squirrel.
Christmas Vacation? Squirrel. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a squirrel.
But yeah, so this cat.
Wait, no, he did kill a cat. Sorry, I'm sorry to cut you off.
It was a squirrel.
Yeah,
no, fine.
It was underneath the chair or something.
Oh,
like
you're
that.
Right. Yeah, because he like ran it over. Didn't he?
I don't know if it died, but something happened to that cat.
Common theme in William Hickey's career.
Yeah. All right.
But
sorry.
No, that's fine. But yeah, so we kind of told the story before.
Yeah. Yeah, we did the gist. So let's do the highlights.
Yeah, drugged up old people from the 20s live in a drugged up old people house, and they're pretty much in a drug haze all the time, and a cat starts killing them.
Yeah.
My favorite person in that whole drug house was the they called him the hired man, not the butler, but the hired man.
His name was like Gage or something.
Yeah.
And who was Mark Margolis?
Margolis.
He was from Breaking Bad. He was Tuco's dad.
Oh.
Remember the old guy that couldn't talk? He just used a little bell.
No,
to communicate?
I didn't watch.
Oh,
didn't
or
watch.
The Sopranos. He is the guy who breaks. He's the guy who gets out of jail to do that hit, and he's the one who's like dying of emphysema.
Yeah.
So he messes it up.
So he's always a badass.
Okay. But yeah, he is awesome because one, he just looks like pissed off that he's there. Yeah. He hates his job.
Yeah,
like,
obviously,
because he's around all these super old, like difficult people.
Yeah,
and
would you call them old biddies?
Yeah, and at one point when we first see the cat, when the cat's sort of first introduced in the lives of these people during a flashback, this man is the butler for all intents and purposes. He's outside with a beer in his like wife beater, and
suspenders.
He's polishing silver, and this cat just walks up and he just like throws his beer at the cat. He tries to get the cat to leave.
He pulls one of the butter knives on the cat.
He has the typical antipathy to black cats found in the uncultured, uneducated people.
Yeah. But yeah, but all the characters
So instead of going through which one, let's see what was your favorite cat death scene?
Oh, cat death scene.
Because there's a couple that were really cool.
There were. I think it was the one at the not the very end, but the second. There was a hitman that was hired to kill his cat.
Yes.
And this is in the present day, not in the flashback.
Yeah, this is David Johansen, Buster Poindexter himself, as this hitman, and he is like the worst hitman. He's like Tom Arnold playing a hitman.
Yeah, he at first he thinks that this cat is going to be super easy to kill. He actually kind of thinks this job is a joke, and he's basically stealing this money from this old dude. And so,
which first of all, he should have done in the first place. This old man invited him to his house, offered him what was it, $50,000
up front
to kill this cat. Which I would have been like, thanks, dude. I'm going to leave, and this cat's going to kill you tomorrow, and then I'm going to come back and take the rest.
Yeah. Smell you later.
Yeah, this is an old guy in a wheelchair. He's alone in his house. He's not surrounded by goons.
But yeah, so. So this hitman, he tries everything. He has his little hitman briefcase, and he's trying basically everything he has, like poisons and everything else. And then
the cat came back the very next day.
Just shoot the cat.
Yeah. And so
he has a gun.
He's got a couple of guns.
But it's not even like revealed until like he's tried everything else.
Yeah.
And then there's like this fake drawer, like fake little...
it's like a false bottom drawer.
False bottom, yeah. And he reveals he has this gun with a sight, and it's like, why didn't you use that?
Yeah, because he showed up at the house expecting to be hired to kill a person. So he probably brought this gun. Why didn't he just use it?
Yeah.
So, but he does use it, and we find out why it doesn't matter anyway, because he shoots
the
cat.
I think you can't kill the cat, is what it is.
No. Because he has the sights on the cat, and he's telling the cat, I've never missed.
Yeah,
this is like, you know,
I've never messed up a hit or something like that.
Now you are, though.
Yeah.
So basically, he has a laser sight on the cat, and he shoots, and it misses, and then he tries again, and it misses. So I'm just thinking that the cat's indestructible. You can't kill this cat.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. The cat's already got, like, supernatural abilities. I mean, it's got, like, adamantium claws. It can go through, like, every layer of skin.
It's got 99 lives.
Yeah, and the cat beats the fuck up out of this dude, this hitman.
Yeah.
And he's, like, he scratches open his, like, crotch area.
Yeah, it bites his balls.
Yeah, and it's just beating him up, and then he has him on the floor, or no, the guy's still standing, and the cat like lodges itself into his mouth and just starts digging,
crawls into his mouth and then into his stomach and all this other stuff.
Yeah,
it was nuts.
And
it's like a Mortal Kombat like fatality.
Exactly. Like he just leaves him dead on the floor, and like his mouth is just agape because because he stretched out his, like, he broke his jaw. I'm sure, because that cat was not like that tiny.
Yeah, this would have been the fatality for Conker from Conker's Bad Fur Day if he was in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
crawl down somebody's chest and kill them, or down somebody's throat.
And then the cat just waits there until the old man gets back. But that was the
That was a cool death.
That was pretty cool. And plus the cat coming out back out of the man after.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was really gross.
That whole scene was just completely unexpected. Mm-hmm. Which was probably like one of the highlights of the movie. Just because the cat just jumps and you expect, oh, it's just going to claw the shit out. Yeah,
because the only way the cat killed people was like just the way the real cat could do it if it was super malevolent.
Yeah.
So another cool scene was the death scene was there was a very... normal one where the cat's just walking on the stairs and trips the old lady.
Which anyone who's had a cat knows exactly about. They're going to die that way one day.
This and old lady tumbles 55,000 times as she goes down the stairs.
Yeah, my cat tries that every fucking morning, so I know. Like that's not just something cats do.
Yeah, and then there's another one in the bed.
Where the other flapper lady decides she's going to go to sleep and the cat comes into her room. I guess she's been keeping the cat in her room because she's afraid her drug-addled brother... Because her drug-addled brother wants to kill the cat, I guess. Because he's determined that... Oh, yeah, he's like, yeah, you killed that other crazy old lady who lives in my house. So she keeps it in her room and it, you know, jumps on her face and, you know, facehugger aliens her to death. And...
As Animal Planet has previously stated, cats, ultimate killer.
Ultimate killer.
Unfortunately, there was no Jackson Galaxy around to pacify this cat.
That's what they needed. They just needed Jackson Galaxy to come in and blink at it.
This cat isn't returning my slow blink. It must be from hell.
So now we're to
the Lover's Vow.
Lover's Vow.
Oh, that's what that was called. Yeah, which is an adaptation of the Yuki Onna story as seen in Qui-Don.
Yeah.
Ah. Yes.
This is a interesting one.
This one threw Furrier a loop a little bit.
It was predictable in some ways, but then like the story also was kind of just so weird that like I'd never seen parts of like that kind of kind of storytelling, you know what I mean?
I think the plot was very predictable, but the actual like details of it were very weird.
It was a nice universe.
Yeah,
I don't know about nice.
Yeah, it was depressing as hell. You open up on this this failed artist who goes to this failed artist bar where it's clearly like the breakup bar. It's where like everyone who's ever been divorced or you know filed papers against or whatever goes to drink.
Yeah, like every other table has two guys at it ready to serve a divorce papers to whoever walks in.
Just like a bunch of regulars sitting at the bar because, well, no, one regular playing chess by himself sitting at the bar who gets free drinks because he's clearly just a lush.
It's just cheers. Everybody knows everybody's name.
Yeah. And it's easy because there's like two people who go there.
Yeah. And it's in like a back alley. Like the bar is in the entrance to the bar is an alley. So this artist, he's a failure. His agent goes to the bar to break up with him, basically.
played by Robert Klein, of all people. Yeah. Tells him, Judith's not selling any work anymore, buddy. You gotta hit the road.
Judith says she hasn't moved anything of yours in over 4 months. She says if the stuff isn't out by tomorrow, it gets junked.
Wyatt, you've got to convince her that I
can't convince her of anything.
Wyatt, you're my agent.
Well, not exactly. Preston, your artistic vision is just not a marketable commodity.
Wyatt, I'm broke. I can't live on nothing.
And I can't live on 10% of nothing.
So he's leaving the bar. The bartender's like, I'll drive you home because you're fucking drunk. And so they're leaving. The bartender's locking up. He actually locks up the lush inside.
He's already passed out.
He'll be there in the morning.
He'll be there in the morning.
Out of nowhere, there's just flashes of like what the hell's going on? Like, the boxes on the ground are shaking around, and
that part was just weird. Like there was no precedent for it; it just shows up.
Yeah. No, there was no background. They offered zero background on why any of these things would happen.
Well, it's exactly like the beginning of The Unholy, because suddenly, like some invisible thing is just slashing this guy's neck open.
This is just a world where this thing happens.
Yeah, watch out.
Yeah. Just got to watch out for gargoyle attacks. Yeah. It's 1990s. So the gargoyles are real.
You can't really see it at this point, but it's just coming in and slashing the fuck out of this bartender. Yeah. Like it cuts his hand off,
and then he goes, "Help me!" As if there's any way that this artist can help him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it just straight up slices his neck and his head goes flying.
Yeah.
And so it was
a cool shot.
It was cool. That was good. Yeah. And the gargoyle, like the wings and everything, like it, for like as far as practical effects go, it's amazing. It's really like the way that they did the knees, because it was the knees that bent like backwards.
Yeah,
the way they did all of that.
Oh, yeah. It moved not too awkwardly.
Yeah. The only thing that was like kind of awkward is the mouth, but that's always difficult.
Yeah,
with, like, that sort of like puppetry.
Yeah, and they made it talk too, so it was hard to match.
I like the gargoyle's voice though. It was pretty scary. It wasn't your typical evil voice.
And yeah, so the gargoyle then comes up to the artist, and he's like he's scared out of his mind. He's trying to get back to the bar. I don't know why. And the gargoyle comes up and then just starts speaking to him. And it's like, because the guy's begging for his life. And the gargoyle's like, I'll let you live on one condition. And that condition is to never tell anybody what happened tonight or what I look like or that you saw me or that I exist or anything about what you just witnessed. And the guy's like, oh, like at first he's like, really?
Wait, really?
Yeah. He's like, and it's like, are you going to try to negotiate with this thing? And then finally he's like, oh yeah, okay, yeah. And the gargoyle like slashes him real quick on the chest, just a little like love.
Yeah, just like, a little tease. Slash. Yeah.
Just and, to make them blood brothers.
Yeah, and then just that's part of the agreement. That's how you like
solidified in blood.
Yeah, that's like doing a like a handshake, like spit.
Yeah,
handshake.
Gargoyle pinky swear.
Yeah. And so the gargoyle takes off.
Because this gargoyle is actually just like a mobster gargoyle. Like, yeah, you didn't see nothing here.
Yeah,
you don't know anything about what just happened. That guy, he just fell. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Which is just
off.
It's just such a weird proposition. Like, why would you just kill somebody and then just say, hey, don't tell anybody? Like, there's no motive
at
all.
That gargoyle just was like, fuck this guy.
This is the exact same thing that happened in the ancient Japanese folktale, the Yukiona. So I remember seeing that in the movie Quaidon. But it doesn't make any sense.
Do they explain it in that either?
No. It's just like the guy, he promises the monster that he will never talk about how he saw the monster. And then like 10 years later, he tells his wife, you know, you remind me of this scary monster I saw once. And then she turns into the monster and kills him.
It's so weird.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so the monster takes off. And at first, like I was thinking like, oh, this gargoyle is just into like weird like psychosexual games where like it's just it just gets off on like, oh, this person's never gonna be able to keep the secret.
I'm
gonna get the secret out of them and I'm gonna kill them and it's gonna fucking get me hard.
Not hard because it turns out to be female, a Radon Chong type creature.
Yeah, so
enter Radon Chong.
Yeah, and this is really weird too, because what happens is how Radon Chong enters is that the artist is just running for his life. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah,
he's running, and he runs into Radon Chong.
Yeah, she's like, I'm looking for a cab, and obviously that's a lie.
Yeah, and he like gets her up against a wall, and like
looks like he's gonna
he
like,
yokes
kinda,
the shit out of her up into a dark alley, covers her mouth, tells her to shut up, then questions why she's on the street at all. It's dangerous out here.
Yeah, it's because of him.
Because you're attacking this lady.
Also because of gargoyles.
And then he convinces her somehow to go home with him.
Yeah, he's like, you're not going to get a cab. Yeah. Come to my house. We'll call a cab.
Yeah.
And then basically she just
he
gets
says,
talked
removing
into
his mouth, his hand from her mouth.
She is his constant companion from then on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it moves so damn quick. It's like they meet, they have sex that night. The next day she moves in. And then we find out she's pregnant. And then they're getting married. And
within
this is
like
all
a
within
week.
Like,
and she gets him a great placement, a great gallery.
Yeah. And screen time, it's about like 4 minutes between like when they meet to when they're getting married.
Yeah, that's the kind of pace that all these stories should have been at all the time.
Yeah,
really. And I mean, there's no conversation. Like, he has more conversation with his agent and the bartender who was killed than he actually has with Radon Chong before they decide they're going to get married.
But yeah, they jump ahead 10 years then. It's been a beautiful 10 years, we're told, and they've had a beautiful marriage, and they have two beautiful kids, and they love their lives.
The agent's back in their life. Robert Klein's like the uncle.
Yeah. He's got a hit career now.
Yeah.
He's wearing sunglasses. Things are looking up for this guy.
And all the while, the artist keeps drawing these like gargoyle things, but he never says anything.
He's never shared the gargoyle photos, I guess.
He always, I don't know if he feels ashamed or he's just scared or but he always kind of puts them away.
My take on it is that he doesn't want her to ask any questions.
He just doesn't
want to
get questions.
He doesn't
want
to be compelled to tell her what's happening.
I thought that if this gargoyle was really evil, it would be constantly like tempting him to be like, you never saw any gargoyles, did you?
Well, it turns out that the gargoyle really isn't evil. I don't think it has control over her.
Yeah, when she eventually has to turn back into a gargoyle, she really doesn't enjoy it.
No,
she really just wanted to be loved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because their 10-year anniversary makes him feel all sorts of like whatever. He's like, oh, you know, I want to tell you everything. I want to open up to you about everything. I want to be truthful about everything.
Because this family is extremely truthful about absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So you see the 10-year later, the two kids come in. I guess it's like Halloween or they just went to some costume party or something.
Yeah.
So like, you know, Radon Chung explains to one of the kids, he's like, oh, you know, it's me and Dad's 10-year anniversary from the first day we met. The daughter then says, oh, you mean the day where Daddy pushed you up against a wall and tried to raid you?
Just super nonchalantly.
That's the story I tell the kids every night.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, so, you know, if that ever happens,
he's
10
the
years
one.
Later, you could have some kids.
Yeah.
Great.
He is the one. If he pulls you off a street and corners you. You gotta marry him.
Yep. It's such a great story. You know, how could they not end up as a couple?
I just like the idea that this is a story that they told their children.
Yeah, yes. That the kids know this. They're not 10 years old, they know this.
And they're okay with it. They're totally, it's normal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as you can guess, as you've been told, the artist does tell Radon Chong that that what happened that night.
Yeah.
And she gets super upset, which I don't understand. Maybe there's some sort of spell involved where she can't say anything about it.
Yeah.
Or like warn him against it.
Maybe she was cursed.
Because she doesn't, like, as he's starting to tell her, you could see like the worried look on her face, but she's not telling him to stop.
Yeah.
Because she could at it's one of those points say, just say, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, sure.
And so he tells her, and then she's like, you know, she starts crying, and she's like, you broke your promise, and then starts turning into, it's a very, very howling type scene.
Yeah, it's an awesome transformation scene.
Where she just breaks out of Radon Chung, and like her boobs break out and turn into like,
and it goes full like gargoyle. It looks kind of, the creature kind of looks like a gremlin on steroids.
You took the non-furry gremlins and just, you know, gave him a whole bunch of like, HGH or maybe
HGH.
And what's great is the artist tries to like negotiate with her again. He's like, but just turn back, just turn back.
I love you. I love you.
And they're both telling each other like, I love you.
Like, turn back. Blah. I'll forget this ever happened.
Yeah. And then you start worrying about like, oh my god, what about the kids? Is she gonna do something to the kids? But then the kids come out and they're both little gargoyles.
Yeah.
Oh, gargoyle grimace. Babies.
And then she kills him very lovingly with just a bite to the neck.
Yeah.
She doesn't try to like slash him up or anything.
Yeah, that was sweet of her.
Yeah, and then she grabs the kids, flies up out of the roof, which is made of glass because it's an artist loft.
Yeah.
And it's an industrial artist loft, of course. It's 1990.
Yeah.
And so she flies up. The agent is downstairs waiting for, he's got a, just getting into a cab.
Yeah.
And the cabbie and him see the gargoyle flying up. And they don't know what it is, but the cabbie's like, did you see that? And he's like, I'd rather not. Or do you know what that is? He's like, I'd rather not know.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here.
The agent is such a dick.
I don't care.
The entire time, he's the worst person.
And speaking of the cabbie, all three of these stories had a cabbie in them. Like,
yes.
Why didn't they take the opportunity to have them unified by the same actor playing all three cabbies?
Instead, they had this just random people play the cabbie. Yeah. I think the best one is the one who picks
metalhead?
Up Steve Buscemi.
Like metalhead punk rock dude.
I was sure he was played by like the guy from the band Fear or something, but no, it was an actor. Then the middle story's cabbie was just this typical like, "Hey, how you doing there, guy?"
Yeah.
And this cabbie, you hardly get to see him, but he's there.
Yeah, all three of them should have been played by Tom Savini or something.
Yeah, but
that would have been cool.
But the gargoyle ends up just apparently the gargoyle is just from that building.
Yeah,
and she just plops right down back on that building, holding her two little gargoyle childrens, and then turns back into a gargoyle.
They turn back into stone, and that's it.
So
then we get back to Annoying Boy and Betty the Witch.
Yeah.
Betty the
Blondie herself.
Witch.
Yep. And this is a part of the story that was just kind of the way they told it was like kind of out of order. I felt like I felt like the kid should have been a bit more clever about it. He still wins, but the kid's like begging, Debbie Harry's like, oh, okay, time to, you know, time to eviscerate you.
time to put you on this like 5 foot long thing covered with tinfoil to go in the oven. I love that.
Yeah. She basically has a cremation oven in her kitchen.
Yeah.
And so she's, the Matt Lawrence is like begging her, no, another story. Let me tell you another story. I got an even scarier story. And she's like, no. It's time to get you.
Time to eat.
Yep. And so, so she comes in and he starts telling a story, and it's obviously the story about how he got in there.
Yeah.
And she tells him like, this is your story. And then he's like, no, there's stuff that you don't know.
He starts taking over the story throwing in details.
Yeah. And he's like, the boy had a pocket full of marbles and then he threw them at her feet and she didn't see them, and so she fell back. And he says this before he puts the marbles on the ground, which I feel like you kind of should just toss them and then say that.
While she was captivated by your earlier stories, you should have been putting the marbles everywhere,
you'd think. So she falls back on all of the needles and things, knives, whatever she was gonna use. Those are just all on her back. And he gets the keys, he knocks her into the oven on his way out, mm-hmm. he grabs a cookie. And that's the end of the fucking story.
What were those cookies? Black.
Oh, I wrote that down. It was Chips-A-Lot brand cookies.
Chips-A-Lot. Chips-A-Lot. And they had a ShopRite brand logo on it.
Oh, really? I thought it was not a real brand.
No, that was definitely a ShopRite.
I was wondering about the beer that James Remar, the artist, was drinking. It looked like Anchor Steam beer or something.
Holsten. He called it Holsten.
Oh.
Holsten Dry.
Is that a real beer? Dry.
I don't drink. I'm the last one to confirm that.
Well, I think this was so really Tales of the Dark Side, the movie from 1999.
No, 1990.
Just an ad for Chips-A-Lot. Or 1990. Yeah, 1990. Really just an ad for Chips-A-Lot.
Pretty much. Yeah. There's so many Chips-A-Lot chips.
Chips-A-Lot.
Cookies in that.
Yep. Gargoyle eats one at the end. The mummy's got a whole handful of them.
Yep.
All right. Closing statements, anybody?
Yeah. I guess just for young boys on their paper routes, don't follow anybody into their home. Yeah. I mean, even if it's Debbie Harry. Yeah.
Don't trust Blondie.
Don't trust.
What's the best that could happen if you do that, kids?
Just don't trust adults like that, you know? Yeah. I don't care if you're collecting money. Just don't. Yeah. I mean, everything's online now anyway, so.
Yeah.
I don't think there are paper routes for kids.
I don't even think
there are people. It's an adult job though.
They do in their cars.
Which is sad.
Kids just have to drive around twice a year and throw yellow pages on people's doorsteps in bags.
Yeah. Hate them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the practical effects were cool. We forgot to mention the zombie douchebag and the sister turn into like a zombie thing going on at the end.
Yeah, that was what happened at the end of the mummy story, because somehow Steve Buscemi brought them back to life as mummies/zombies.
To kill a person Slater. And that was very Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah.
That sort of happened in one of the Twilight Zone stories.
The makeup was weird, because in some of them it was really good, and in some of them, in the cat one, the blood was terrible.
And then
the other ones, it was awesome. So I'm wondering if they had different teams. I'm assuming they did.
I think they had
a couple separate teams that do different stuff.
All the movies at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. My closing statement is that my favorite exchange from the movie was in this exchange Steve Buscemi is trying to negotiate with Christian Slater, and he's like, don't kill me. Killing me won't bring them back. And Christian Slater is like, if I leave you alive, will that bring them back? He really shut down that line of questioning. That should have happened in The Wicker Man as well.
That was a good retort, actually. That was awesome.
Yeah.
You got anything to add, Daryl?
Killing me won't hurt. Killing me won't help. Yeah, but it won't hurt.
Can hardly argue with that logic.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a really awesome scene with Christian Slater when he cuts off the mummy's arm and like hand. He's holding the hand up, and since he's broken off the fingers, the only finger that's left is the middle finger. Christian Slater just gets this awesome look on his face.
He's like, look at that.
He's really enjoying how hilarious that is in the moment. It's great. It's a great Christian Slater face.
Yeah.
It is. It's hilarious.
You got anything to add, Daryl?
Well, I guess for all the contractors out there, you should probably be a little bit more skeptical when a housewife asks you to build a cremation-style oven and a dungeon where the pantry should be.
Yeah.
Just, these are questions to ask.
Yeah, you never know. You know. Hey, maybe she buttered that deal a little bit.
Maybe she did like a little H.H. Holmes and...
no questions to ask, you know.
Yeah.
Cash down, and you know, then that's the first, you know, first person you eat.
Yeah.
She's got that whole dungeon there. Why doesn't she keep him there until he actually gets fat?
She doesn't know how to do this.
She's hungry, man.
Yeah. She didn't really plan this. She's a witch. It doesn't mean that she's good at planning out dinners.
Yeah.
She should be good at planning out human sacrifices.
Okay. Just for reference, she also didn't have any champagne glasses.
Yeah.
And she was throwing a dinner party that night. So that's how much, like, She just doesn't like.
I think maybe they were all gonna eat the kid.
That's what.
So maybe she's just like
she's clearly the dumb blonde in her social witch circle, like Sarah Jessica Parker in Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, she's just not very good at planning things.
Maybe it was just last minute.
Yeah, it could have been.
She couldn't plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, maybe you know they do dinner parties at everyone's house, and she's like, oh, you know, I don't have any wine glasses.
Yeah. Evil witches have lives, you know.
Yeah.
She had a life. She has a car.
Yeah. Come on, man. She's out touring the country.
Yeah.
Singing.
Yeah, she apparently has some sort of like husband too, or some partner.
Something.
Yeah. Oh, it's gonna be awkward for him when he comes back and finds his wife cooked.
Ooh.
Awkwardly delicious.
Still eat her, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wonder why there's a kid eating cookies in his house.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, I think that's it. Well.
Fade to music.
What are we supposed to end with? Keep it real, GoBots?
Nope.
Keep it real, GoBots.
I think you're the only one that ends it like that.
I think we've already ended this. This episode has ended probably a minute or so ago.
Ooh, is there some party tonight that I'm missing?
There certainly is. Preston and I are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the night we first met.
You mean when he thought he was going to push you up against the wall and rape you?
Yes, darling.